Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line Podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios on this Wednesday morning. Joining me on the other end of the line for part 7 of The Path. Maybe the most long, drawn-out story ever, Bill. Is Bill Cooksey.
We can do some rambling and back and forth because a lot's gone on over that journey.
You know, before I hit the record button, I was trying to go back through and we're going to try to get back on the story a little bit today. And I was trying to go back through and see what part, as far as the story goes, what part we left on. And it was part 6, so this is part 7 of The Path today with Bill Cooksey. Bill, I'll say this, that the episode with you and Pat on Monday, I knew when we left it. You from doing this for 3 years, you know when you leave some of these episodes, you in the back of your mind and in your gut, you're like, this is going to be big. And I told y'all that before we got off the phone, I said, this is going to be big. And it was. It was a great episode, but it was hugely popular with the group. Ton of people listened to it, ton of downloads on that
good.
Particular episode.
I'm glad people enjoyed it. You know, Pat and I can be cantankerous and don't generally hedge from offering an opinion. But I can tell you whether you're a seasoned veteran duck hunter or a guy just getting into it, both of us actually care about the sport and the people involved in it and want everyone to do well and everyone to have a good opportunity within the sport. So I'm glad people enjoyed it.
Was there anything after we got done recording or over the past couple of days that, I mean, is there anything we missed after you thought about it?
Oh, man. It's funny because I've seen a lot of things on Duck South, not necessarily arising from the podcast, but between the podcast and so many people are arguing about young hunters versus old hunters. It's, you know, first, I think we need to forget age. And that's one thing I learned doing the pro staff thing for so many years. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it or how new you are to it. You probably have something, if you've done it for any length of time, to offer, something I can learn from you. You know, first time I hunted with Tony Vandemore, I thought, man, this kid hadn't been doing this. Well, I was wrong. The kid taught me a lot of stuff. It's new hunters. It's not new versus old, but when you hear, like, more experienced people talking, it's about new, and especially new and unmentored hunters, and it's a difficult thing to deal with, I mean, especially in the field, because... And I understand why guys get sideways with each other. I've done it. I don't tend to like I used to, but you're out there on one of your days off and everything's going well, and then some dude comes up and sets up on top of you, or does, you know, we've all been there, and you know he's new to it, and the right thing to do is try to be gentle with him and explain how to do it better, but it's your day off. It's your only day off. It's the first day you've had ducks. And you get mad. And suddenly you're yelling at each other. And the internet from the from the old days of the forums to Facebook now just makes it even worse, because then it's in writing. So we have a lot of unmentored hunters coming into the sport and have for the last several years, and it's a conundrum on how to help transition that better.
Some of these guys, I don't know if they'd be able to make it back in the old forum days. Because I know the MS Duck days, listen, you didn't have a face to put with a screen name. You didn't go by your real name back in the forum days. And you think it's bad now? Man, there were some dark places in those old forums where...
Man, you go back to Spav and Hoosier Jim and Duck Callers of Nebraska, and they were all rocking and rolling, and Benny and who all else were out there, and they were brutal, and no one knew who these people were unless they chose to share it. I always went by my own name on the waterfowl forums, and that made things a little bit different for me. But other folks, they could drive by and hammer you, and you had no idea who it was. It could be a guy from your own hunting camp. Generally, if you had thick skin, everything worked out. But if you didn't, I mean, I was physically threatened at one point on forums by people who, short of getting the police involved to trace IP addresses or to force the trace of IPs, who knows who they are. So Facebook is really nothing. At least you have a name and location for the people coming after you. Generally, obviously some people still work around it, but those you realize pretty quick are trolls and just trying to get a rise.
Yesterday, I rose the question, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because you did make a couple of comments up under it. I want to go back to the podcast first. One of the things that you and Pat talked about the very last 10 minutes, and I keep going back to that, I try to get people to understand, is at the end of the day, duck hunting is like a locker room, like y'all said. Never thought about it in that context, but I thought about it from the standpoint of group of guys having a good time, cutting up, and in between, there's a lot of education, a lot of information. If you're sitting in a duck blind with a bunch of guys, there's a lot of picking, a lot of ribbing, but a lot of good information if you sit back and listen to those you're hunting with, new, old, whoever it may be. And
absolutely.
How do we make Duck South that, I know what the goal of MS Ducks was from the very beginning when Micah found it. It was to make, bring group of guys together, united under one umbrella to make the sport better.
Mm-hmm.
And to make, create a place where those people could gather, pick, rib, share great information, and be educational at the end of the day. And I'm wondering, a lot of people said that it can't work on social media. A lot of people said, man, it'll never work. Too many of these groups have failed. But I think it can.
Well, sure. It'll never work for everyone. One thing you see on social media, you see so many people, and I learned this in the forums, you'll see people who, I hunt alone. I only hunt with people I know really well, et cetera, a few close buddies or family. A lot of times those are the guys that have the hardest time interacting on forums, because they probably haven't spent a lot of time in duck camps and around a bunch of, big groups of different folks who duck hunt, you get a bunch of guys together, high school football locker room comes back. And we get used to dealing with each other that way. When someone asks what we think is a stupid question, we rib them. If we realize he was sincere in that question, okay, now you back up and you try to answer it. And sometimes that persona comes across, and in writing, it can be horrible, because people aren't, if you don't have the same mindset as the guy who wrote something, and you don't have the same, your reading ability matches his writing ability, and you're kind of in the same place psychologically at the moment, if you're not matched up, you can get a whole different meaning from someone who's just trying to have fun, or maybe trying. I've had people get mad when I was providing a real answer. It just wasn't the one they wanted to hear. I mean, I was, you know, sincere as could be. It wasn't the answer they wanted, and they get mad. So, first, yes, people who are too aggressive, you have to do something about it. But you also have to censor that, you know, whoever's in charge of monitoring and censoring those posts has to use common sense of, well, this guy was trying to be funny, and this guy's way too sensitive. And the people who are too sensitive are just as responsible for the problems as the people who are overbearing. Because you have probably 90% of the people are somewhere in the middle. They don't get upset. They don't overdo it against people. They don't hammer on them. And everyone has a good time. But those other 10%, those are the guys you throw out of your duck club after 1 year.
That's true.
So I think you get some, if you want to look at it as a curve, you get some on both ends of the curve that are just, they don't work well with people. And social media gives them a place to try. And those folks fail there just like they do at their jobs and at being in a good hunting camp or anything else. So if you find yourself getting into it too much and you can't laugh, you're not laughing while you're doing it. If you'll see me go back and forth with people and think we're really bickering, we're both laughing, just like we would be if we were doing it face-to-face. If you can't laugh and enjoy it, don't do it and let everybody get out and let everybody else have fun, because most people will.
Two things. Let me give you two thoughts, and I want to hear your thoughts on those. Number one, all right, if we're really working, if everybody's working toward making the group better, you can't have grandstanders. And what I mean by that, if there are people that, you know, it's all about them, even all their posts.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that kind of what social media is, though, the way we've built it?
Yeah. And outside of news or articles and that sort of thing, I mean, generally you're posting either an experience you had or an experience you heard about that a friend of yours had, or you're asking questions of people. You know, I got on a week or so ago because all of a sudden I was getting over 100 friend requests overnight. For people who appeared legit, I was sure it was a virus. I went on Facebook and I asked the question. Other times I'm pontificating or I'm telling people what I, you know, how our hunting was. So that's social media in a nutshell, and especially modern, more so than the old forum days where everything was on a page, so it wasn't as personal. It was more of a group. And Facebook is much more personal.
I think if you're telling an experience that somebody can learn from, then that benefits the group as a whole. But if you're getting on there to tap on the microphone, hey, is everybody listen, you know, I'm going to try to be funny here. I've kind of found myself wanting to be Pat Pitt sometimes because people grab the microphone, jump up on the soapbox, and everybody tries to be a comedian. Some people are meant to be funny. Some people aren't really funny.
That's true. That's very true. And the people who aren't don't realize it.
That's like me. I'm meant to do this podcast, and I know in life I'm not meant to do video. I really, truly mean that. I hate doing video.
Absolutely.
I love doing a podcast. I love sitting here listening and learning from people that are on this podcast like yourself. It's just, like I said, some people are meant to do certain things in life.
Sure.
And And maybe I kind of, boy, I'm really thinking out loud here. Maybe I've kind of set myself up for that when it comes to this group because I allow certain people to be funny. And, you know, people jump in and try to imitate it.
Yeah, but, you know, usually you can tell it's, man, you're not very funny, but thanks for trying. I mean, that's my attitude about it. And there again, I'm old enough, it's going to be hard for you to say something that bothers me. Yeah, assuming it's about hunting or anything related to what we're talking about, it's going to be hard for you to hurt my feelings. Whereas newer people, you know, it's not.
The one that gets me, though, Bill, is Rob Kroom last year, creating a whole outfitter business and utilizing that phone number. And and people still to this day believe, after all the outlandish stories, stealing the band from a guy in a wheelchair, blah, 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 still believe that Rob Kroom is a gat. That shows you the level of intellect on social media. With each story that came from him, it became more outlandish and more outlandish and more outlandish, and yet people just kept falling for it. Hook, line, and sinker.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, that's kind of always been the case on social media. It's amazing. Even on the forum days, what a turn one sentence could take a thread. You know, it's a great marketing avenue because you do reach so many people and people enjoy it. But I still have stories come back about Avery and people. You know, man, that was horrible. I can't believe y'all didn't end up out of business over that. You know, I can't believe somebody didn't do this or do that. Man, that was nothing. That was nothing. You know, that was a modified post that a few people got carried away with. You know, an edited post, and people take it way too serious. That's another thing. I guess it's in writing, so it's obviously harder for people to grasp someone's meaning and someone's attitude, but also we tend to think if it's in writing to take it more seriously.
Exactly. We were taught that from a young age.
If you and I were in the duck blind and Rob started telling that story to some other folks, in a minute you're going to look at it and say, BS. You know, and everybody's going to laugh. But in writing, oh my God. I mean, now, by the way, I do know, we have a mutual friend who tried to steal a band from a guy in a wheelchair. So to act like it's an outlandish tale is not necessarily the way to go with that.
I'll tell you another. This is just another personal opinion of mine. Two, and this is two subparts. Number one, if you come in and personally attack somebody, I'm not saying that if you disagree. Disagreeing with somebody is not a personal attack on that person. Let's get that point. I don't care what you were taught. If you're 25 or younger, if somebody disagrees with you, they're not personally attacking you.
Okay to disagree.
Right. It's like we live in a culture now that it's not okay to disagree. But it is. That's what makes America great.
Where do you get if you can't disagree? Where do we get as a society? How do we grow if we don't disagree? Forget duck hunting. How does our society even grow?
I hate bringing politics in it. You know, I got home last night from basketball practice, coaching my kids' basketball practice, but flipped the news on before I went to bed, and I saw just Trump and the Democrats disagree in some kind of interview, and I'm like, no, you know, I don't like to see them getting mad, maybe yelling at each other. I want to see them with a little more professionalism. It's okay to disagree. You know, we need to do this behind closed doors. No, the culture, America needs to see that if you don't agree, not to pushing, you know, not for me to say I'm pushing an agenda, but it's okay to disagree.
Yeah.
You can still be friends at the end of the day if you disagree. Me and my wife don't agree on anything, but she is my best friend. I mean, we agree a lot, but when we have a lot of disagreements about things, but at the end of the day, we're best friends.
Right. I don't really understand how, I mean, we all hate to have an idea shot down or someone who we realize knows more than we do about a subject tell you you're wrong. No one likes to hear that. But do you really want to go through life being wrong? And just because someone disagrees with you and you know they're a smart person doesn't make you wrong. It just should make you introspective and make you think about what they've said. Most of the people I work with are so on the opposite side of the political aisle from me, it's not even, we're not comparable when it comes to your basic politics. Yet we get along fine. They know that about me. I know that about them. It's a non-issue. We disagree about a lot of things. Enough we agree on, we actually work together on those things. They're all wonderful people. They think I'm a wonderful guy. People can do that, and that's what we should be doing on the forums. If you think someone's being mean, laugh about it. Get your feelings hurt, smile, laugh, turn that deal around. And one of the most effective ways of dealing with someone who's actually insulting you in person is to laugh at them. And if you laugh, it's over. So do that. Even if you can't obviously do it in writing necessarily other than type ha-ha, but learn to install that switch in yourself. If I could give anyone any advice, you know, you've met me. I'm a little bitty guy. I've heard plenty of crap my whole life about that. You got to laugh. If you let it bother you, man, what a miserable way to live. And everyone has something like that. I guarantee if you talk to anyone long enough, yeah, you know, my hair or my, you know, learn from that, and yeah, those people who are being jerks, try to stop, you know, but I swear if people who get their feelings hurt need to spend a week at Pat's Duck Camp, because that place, it'll thicken your skin.
Do you know who said that? You know who else said the exact same thing as what you just said? Josh Criswell. Josh Criswell was a member there for a long time, and he said the exact same thing when we were discussing this in the moderator forum about how to make it better. He said, listen, everybody should have to go through Pat Pitt's Duck Camp.
Mm-hmm. Everybody gets a nickname, and usually it's not flattering. You know, matter of fact, none of them are flattering. So it's, and my son early on, he was like, man, the kids I go to school with got nothing on these guys because they've been jacking with people for 40 years. You know, they've perfected it. But I remember a youth hunt, my son took his best friend over and he told the kid, he said, look, you're not in until you get a nickname. So, you know, just kind of lay low, chill out. They're going to give you crap. Let it go. If you get a nickname, you're in. Well, the second morning after we came in from hunting, one of the guys is up cooking, and he asked everyone, you know, how they want their eggs. Now, the eggs are all fried. It's a matter of how you want them fried. But this kid, you know, being a kid, he just said, scrambled for me, please. And the guy turned around and said, I don't see your mama here, sugar titty. That became his nickname for the rest of that trip, and the kid was proud of it. You know, he earned his nickname, and it was no worse than some that we 45-year-old guys had. So people on people who get upset and people who try to upset people both need to get over themselves.
The other subpart that I was going to tell you about that I won't have on the forum or inside of the group is something that's going to divide duck hunters as a whole. I've avoided this topic for a long time, and you don't have to give your opinion on this. It doesn't bother me. It's not part of our schedule of events today, but FFL, I'm not letting that crap on there. You're trying to divide up a group of hunters. It's divisional. It's not good for the sport overall.
Oh, the Flyway Federation of Louisiana?
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to figure out how to say this because there are a lot of people who are just duck hunters who are members of that or, you know, don't put a lot of thought in it. They just know their hunting's not bad. And I don't want to say those people are being duped. What saddens me is the people doing the duping generally don't even realize what they're doing. I mean, it's a joke. It flies in the face of sportsmanship. More importantly, it flies in the face of conservation. I mean, closed minds get nothing done unless you're mowing the yard. Yeah, their deal accomplishes nothing other than to make people angry. We all look for a reason when we're not as successful as we think we should be. I get that. I do the same thing. And some of the things you'll see there are people saying, no problem. But
the stuff coming out of the top is
wrong. It's just wrong. It's wrong from the conservation angle. It's wrong from the resource angle. And it's wrong from the sportsmanship angle.
There's people all around them down there that are killing birds that put a ton of work into their property. Dale Bordelon's one of them. He kills ducks every day. Coco. Right. Warren Coco.
Yeah.
You know,
I get it. It's tough, man. I'm seeing it in Arkansas. We don't get birds like we did. And there are a lot of reasons. And I'll give them even some of their more outlandish things. It probably makes some difference. But again, we're in mid-December now. It's 50 degrees in St. Louis today. How the hell do you expect to have ducks in Louisiana? It's a miracle Arkansas and Louisiana still kill what they do when we have Decembers like this. And you know, anyone who studies waterfowl at all knows once you get past the winter solstice, basically right at Christmas, once you get past that, it takes the hand of God to make ducks migrate if they haven't already. So, and once they do migrate, they come right back as soon as it warms up. You know, they head right back north. So until we get December weather again, you know, like in 2000 when we had the ice storm on December 17th? God, that was a great year. At Christmas, Tyndall's Reservoir had a foot of ice on it, but we were still killing ducks, and not at Tyndall's, but at other places in Arkansas and in Tennessee. And when it started warming up, boy, we really killed them. And that year, Louisiana killed them, too. I had buddies down there talking about how great it was. Well, yeah, we got weather in December, and the ducks moved. And this isn't the 60s and 70s when, let's face it, we raped the Mississippi River Valley. The whole flyway as far as habitat and food. And all through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know, there weren't many places for ducks to stop, and there wasn't a lot of food left, especially when you get Missouri, Iowa, you know, those and Illinois. Those places did not have the food. And I'm not talking about what hunters supply. I'm talking about what farmers left in their fields. But you had very little to roost on other than rivers, you know, a few refuges here and there. And no food, that's artificial. That was man-made. Yes, they migrated easy. Certainly they did, easier than now. Yes, now there's habitat. there was habitat there before we screwed it up too. So I don't like what's going on right now as far as the migration, but when it's 50 degrees in St. Louis, I don't expect a lot of ducks to move into my place in Arkansas or in Tennessee. And I sure don't expect them to be in Louisiana. And when Louisiana is dealing with about 40% less habitat or ability to support ducks than they had 20 years ago, when you're killing 40% fewer ducks, that sounds about right. It's miraculous in my mind that with what we have going on with weather and all now, it's miraculous they killed 60% of the ducks they killed 20 years ago. That's some good duck hunters in Louisiana, if you ask me.
Oh, I agree. You know, one of the other ones that hits and divides is what conservation organization is better, DU or Delta Waterfowl? Not even getting into that one.
Vanishing Paradise is where it's at, man. All of these organizations do good stuff. DU does great.
Exactly.
Delta does great. I have great friends within each organization. And I know those guys' hearts. I've known them long enough. Sure, they're trying to earn a living, and some of them get paid pretty doggone well. None of them get paid what they'd be paid in a private business doing what they're doing, with that education level, et cetera. And, you know, whether it's DU or Delta or my organization, there are people out there doing duck hunters' work. And that's one place I think we're missing the boat with a lot of these newer hunters who haven't been mentored. They don't know where to go. And they don't have, one of my earliest memories was at a DU rally. They had what were called rallies before they had dinners. And this would have been in the early 70s, Jackson, Tennessee, probably it was school auditorium, I don't remember, but my dad was on the committee and all. But they had a guy come in, do a duck calling demonstration, and then a shackled mallard was thrown up in the air, and he shot a blank. Well, in my little four-year-old mind, that guy just shot a duck indoors, and that was freaking awesome. So, you know, Ducks Unlimited and that conservation ethic was there when I was a small child. But other people weren't exposed to that, and we need to get them exposed to it. And don't argue about which one's bad. They're all good. Pick the one you want to do the most with and do the most with them. Because good stuff will happen. They'll get something accomplished with your time and resources if you'll help.
Well, those are three that I can think of not having it a part of Duck South that I think would make Duck South. And I think that they would all fall within the gentleman rules of duck hunting. Unspoken rules that we, you know, somebody asked me, maybe we go to the story next week. Spend a couple of minutes on this, Bill. Somebody asked me, said, hey, y'all need to spend a little time on the podcast talking about those unspoken rules, gentlemen rules of duck hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't mind it at all.
No, glad to.
Yeah. There's only one place, number one, and that goes back to what we've originally been talking about this whole time, is respect for one another. That is the number one unwritten gentleman rule of duck hunting.
It's the old golden rule. Doesn't matter if it's public or private ground. You don't infringe on someone else. You don't lease your buddy's place out from under him. You don't mess up a spot someone else is hunting just because you didn't get there first. Let them have their hunt. You know, those are easy ones, and I don't understand how people don't get that. Just because they're shooting in this hole and they're doing really well doesn't mean it's okay for you to move in 100 yards downwind of them, you know, or 100 yards upwind and then try to call them off and screw up everyone's hunt. And that's what happens. That's why these things came about. Their rules, you go hunting timber in Arkansas, if there are ducks in the woods, if there are a bunch of mallards, don't shoot the wood ducks. That's an unwritten rule. And people from other places look at you like you have a hole in the head and say, why is that? Because wood ducks for that first hour are streaming all through the trees. And mallards are flying over. People go to those woods to call in and shoot mallard ducks in the hole. That's what you go there for. If you want a wood duck shooting experience, there are a lot of places you can go. I'll point them out to you. You go there to shoot mallards, and when people are popping away at wood ducks that are screaming through the treetops, they're just pushing the mallards out, and they're wrecking everyone's hunt by doing it. So, now when there's no mallards, shoot the wood ducks. I mean, when there's nothing happening, there's no shooting, there's no calling, there's no mallards in the bottoms, and you go shoot some wood ducks, that's fine. You know, calling ducks off of another group. That one is tricky because so much depends on where you are and how far apart you are. You know, I've sat there and let big bunches of ducks. One place I used to hunt a lot, a friend of mine actually owned a blind that is surrounded by public property. I hunted with him some. I'd go up there and hunt on my own some, not far from Jackson, Tennessee. I'm sure Kroom knows it well. And I was sitting in a hole one day that was about 300 yards from his blind, and he has a big blind, big spread of decoys and all. I got a group of about 150 birds doing it right, and I'm alone in a quick-set boat blind in a little bitty hole that, you know, 20 yards across. And about 8 or 10 came in and lit, and the rest hovered around, and they went up, and they headed towards my friend's hole. I didn't do a thing. I just sat there and waited. And after a few minutes, or it really probably wasn't that long, but they fired off a big volley. I don't know how many they killed, but those ducks in my decoys by then were calm. Well, I waited, stood up, they jumped, and as close as they were, I shot three times, had three ducks, and that actually limited me out. And I called him that night. I said, hey, that's a big bunch you worked. He said, were you over in Simmons Hall? I said, yeah. He said, didn't they get in on you? I said, yeah. Why didn't you shoot? I said, I was alone, man. It's 150 ducks. Why would I shoot at them? You know, a couple lit my decoys, so I got them after, you know, after you shot. That was a calculated thing, not being greedy, not being selfish, let some ducks go elsewhere, we both kill them. And a lot of these unwritten rules, that's really what the desired outcome is improving everyone's quality of hunt, including the person who thinks they need to break them to kill some ducks. If they learn not to, their hunting ends up being better. If that makes sense, I hope it does.
No, it does. I think one you could add to it is, goes back to whether it's public or private. Somebody takes you to a hole, you know, you don't go back to that hole. I think it's proper to call the person that took you to the hole originally before you go back to it. Hey, we're going to such and such hole.
Right. And I'll admit to having done that once. And my friends still, to this day, after 30 years, call that the Cooksey Hole. Because I was taken there by someone. And it turns out that person never went back to that hole, so it didn't hurt anything. But I remember just thinking, God, I can't believe I just did that. Bad deal. I screwed up. And I still feel bad about it, even though it ended up not being an issue for anyone. So, you know, things like that, don't do it. And if you do it, say I'm sorry and learn from it. Because we'll all make mistakes. I'll set up on top of somebody, or you know, you'll have a boat motor breakdown, and that ends up requiring you to go through someone's decoys after shooting time while they're working ducks. Bad deal. But maybe it was circumstances beyond your control. That's why I try not to get mad right off the bat when those things happen. I've been there on both ends of it.
I'll tell you one that I hear about a lot, but that's going out, especially on public land, going out as soon as you get your limit and you're getting out of the hole, well, you're really screwing a lot of people's hunts up. Cranking those loud motors up, getting out of there. Take take a little cooktop with you and sit, after you get your limit, sit in your blind and cook and eat and hang out, unless you got to get back to work or something, I'm sure, but be respectful of other hunters around you when it comes to that.
So much depends, I think, on where you are, and that's an important aspect of this, just like I talked about wood ducks in Arkansas flooded woods. If you need to get out of the woods, I've been in the situation where I got out so another group could get in the hole and hunt. I've done that many times, and I've been on the flip side of that. That's how I met Kent Cullum for the first time, was in Bayou de Vue, probably 91 or 92. That morning, ducks only wanted in one hole, and the only thing I could have done would have been set up on a hole nearby and tried to call off of them. I said, I'm not going to do that. So we sat 100 yards back in the woods, watched them shoot a limited duck, and then those rascals took about an hour and a half to leave. There were ducks landing in the hole while they were trying to get out. I'm like, crap, get out. We'll get in there and shoot too. And they weren't trying to be jerks about it. They didn't realize anyone was waiting. It was waiting. And I finally walked in there and said something. Oh, yeah, we'll get out of here. Had no idea. So, there's also a reason to get out when the getting's good. But be as covert getting out as you were getting in. Don't heave everything into the boats and make the big loud bangs and all. And if you're on your way out, listen for calling and watch for ducks. I mean, if you hear someone up ahead of you,
great.
Shut down.
Great point.
Yep. Shut the engine down, wait on them to work the ducks, and then get through fast. I haven't gone in a few years. So I used to go hunt a lot of the WMAs in Arkansas. Usually I'd hunt with buddies over there, but sometimes I'd go and hunt by myself. And when I hunted by myself, usually it's a place I hadn't been to in a while, so I had no idea where to even look. But I didn't try to put in and get in the races or follow people. I'd wait till it started breaking day, and then I just take off slowly, where I could hear the shooting, I could hear the calling, and gradually work my way away from people. And never go through decoys, none of that, because I'm not going in where all the people are. But you can watch the ducks, you can listen to the shooting and the calling and start figuring travel corridors, get under one, away from people, and shoot your ducks. But if you're going to try to hunt right near everyone else, go early.
Well, I think those are a great start. And I kind of threw it on you today.
No, that's fine. There are a lot of clubs. You can learn a lot. And I think game and fish agencies could learn a lot by watching some of the more some of the better managed clubs over the years. I was in one in California that didn't allow any magnum loads, and this was back during lead shot days, 2 3/4 inch only, and only two shots. And that this was a place in Southern California where pressure management was paramount, because you didn't have new ducks coming on a regular basis. I mean, you were down in the desert at Palmdale, California. So by doing that, by managing their pressure and managing your shooting, you didn't, they hunted two people in each little blind. They had little two-man pits. And four shots was the most you'd ever hear at any group of ducks. And their theory was, the more shooting, the higher they get pushed when they're leaving. And by God, they held ducks all the time on these little bitty ponds in the desert. Still the biggest flock of pintails I've ever seen come into a spot in my life was on one of those little ponds. I don't know how many it was, but we couldn't shoot. It was too many. Scared to death to pull the trigger until they thinned out.
And it goes back to what Bill said at the beginning of this. When it comes to the human-to-human interaction, golden rule always works best.
Mm-hmm. And every now and then, following it will cost you a few ducks. In the long run, you'll more than make up for it. By people offering you to hunt, by people offering help, offering you to join them, pointing out another place you could go. Did I tell the story about Black River on the air several years ago? I was hunting with some guys who were involved in that NEA classic that Pat talked about, where they raised money for the local hospital.
No,
I went on a timber hunt with them at Black River, and it was during Christmas holidays, and a couple of kids, as we're just standing by the boats, getting ready to hide the boats and start hunting, some kids came into the hole, and this was when you could still have decoys out, college kids. And they're like, well, crap, we found this yesterday and marked it on a GPS. We're hoping y'all wouldn't be here. The old guy who's a ramrod, and we had like 10 people. He said, look, we have a pretty big crowd. It's public. You're welcome to hunt with us, but we have a lot of people to hide. But if you look across the hole at that trail right there, you can follow it about 150 yards, and there's a small hole with my decoys in it. It's a dang good spot, and you'll kill ducks. And the ducks were in there good, and we shot our limits. And as we were standing around taking pictures, these kids come motoring out, and they were just like, Mister, we just had the most incredible time of our lives. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We've never lit a, you know, we had a group of ducks. We've never seen that many ducks came in and landed, you know, in front of us. And so everyone had a great experience because everyone acted right. They killed more ducks than they expected to, and they didn't get to hunt the spot they were planning to go.
Bill, do you think that it's, people think, I say people, and I'll say men. You think they think that they're going to lose their man card if they have to give up their pride for a moment?
Yeah, there's probably some of that, but then there's, I think a lot of it comes from just your mindset at the moment. And that's getting away from the people who are just jerks or the people who just get their feelings hurt. Just for normal people, we get to the boat landing or to whatever, we're in a hurry to get there. We're worried about we're running late. Then we have to get the boat started, and half the time it doesn't, and you have to find some ether somewhere to get it cranked. And so you're going through all of this mess to try to get there in time to hunt. And then you get there and there's something jacked up about it. There's a person there. There's, you know, one wrong word. Everyone's mind is in a, you're real close to being in a really good place. It's about to be daylight in the duck woods. But right now we've just been through an ordeal to get there. And I think that's where a lot of it comes from. You're raw at the moment a lot of times. I know I am sometimes in the morning. I mean, that first little bit is not my best time sometimes because I'm pushing everybody. I'm trying to hurry. I'm trying to, you know, get decoys done. Even hunting a private place that I shouldn't be in a hurry, I'm in a hurry. That's probably where a lot of it comes from when you're talking about ordinarily reasonable people. And you get two with that mindset together on opposite sides of an argument, and the next thing you know, there's a paddle upside the head.
We can't sit around and complain about the... Never mind. Not going to dive off into that today.
Well, there's a difference between complaining about or talking about people who are out of hand with any of this stuff, whether it's in person or on the book of faces, and people who jokingly just go, God, again, when someone says, hey, I have a brand new 26-inch Auto 5, what choke works best out of it? Really? Really? And that is a hard one to take seriously. I've never answered one of those. I've tried to answer when people ask about loads, that sort of thing, and give them some insight, but nobody knows what choke's going to work best out of your gun, and it's hard not to say it in a way that's like, come on, man, just go shoot your freaking gun. We don't know. There's so many chokes on the market, I don't know where you even start. Start with what's in your gun when you buy it, is my usual answer someone asked, but...
Maybe I'm just used to dealing with beginner hunters, being from the profession that I am. why probably. I have a little more patience with it than most people.
Probably. And, you know, for those, for newer hunters out there, especially those who are maybe parents or at least have been around enough kids, you know, I'm sure everyone has been in that situation where someone has asked something and you just looked at them and thought, when my mama said there's no such thing as a stupid question, she lied to me. Well, it happens so much when you're raising kids where your kid asks a question, you're like, oh, God, not this crap again. You know, we all go through that. And but you try with your own kid, but every now and then, even with mine, good grief, son, think about it. When it's somebody else's kid, it's real hard to be nice about it. You want to just walk away. And on when they put it in writing on Facebook, it's hard for me to blame guys who just give them hell. It really is, because some of this just, but they're new. I get it. I do get it. But everyone needs to take a deep breath on both ends of that deal. I actually had to tell someone I was wrong on social media the other day. And this was something not hunting related at all, but I actually used, it actually had to do with Hugh Freeze, and I said something about the Bible, and actually quoted what I thought was a Bible verse. And someone said, are you sure about that? And I went back and researched it, and it turns out something I'd heard my entire life as a Bible verse wasn't. I had to go back and say, man, I was wrong. I'm glad you asked. I've been thinking that for 45 years. And I hate to admit that, but I had to go back and take it. And that was on a page I'm not even big on. It just.
I will end it with this. It's easier to complain than actually setting the example to make a difference.
Amen.
That's our world. That's the world we live in, and you got to understand, and we've circled back around to that point where a lot of these guys that are part of this group, I grew up with a dad that hunted. Bill grew up with a dad that hunted. All of us grew up with somebody mentoring us. A lot of the people that are getting into hunting today had nobody. They had nobody.
Right. They have the television and internet. That's their intro to hunting.
The pot, but some of them are serious. Do you know those annoying questions that you used to ask your dad, 100 of them riding in the truck or standing beside the tree while you were hunting?
Yep.
That's these kids. They were you. Mm-hmm. They're just doing it now.
These 40-year-olds that just got into it.
Yeah. They just may be.
Doesn't matter what your age is.
That's right. They may be 20, 30, 40, 16 years old when we did it at 8 and drove our dad nuts.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm not their dad, so it's hard for me to have the same kind of patience that our dads have.
Right.
Although I can remember mine a few times just as I've done my own son. Good God, son, figure it out. But hopefully some of your guys listen to some of this and will take it with a grain of salt when people give them a hard time, because it's just all part of the learning experience.
Oh, yeah. That's hunting camp. Very, very blessed to be a part of a hunting camp with great friends and family growing up. To know that picking and joking, but yet at the end of the day, information and education were a huge part of hunting camp. And that's why we all yearn for that experience.
Mm-hmm. I wish everyone listening had the chance to get involved in a good hunting camp where they can be with a diverse group of people, because it's one of the most intense social interactions you can have in life if done right.
And if you can't, we're going to start Pat Pitts boot camp this summer. He's talking about retiring anyway. He's going to get it started at Lane Gill.
We'll go to Camp Pitt.
When you come out of there, you will know not only how to hunt, but how to interact with people and how to receive what people have to say.
Exactly. That's what we need more of.
Bill, I really, really enjoyed it. I'm sorry that we did not get back to the story like we said we were in the beginning. Great podcast. Thank you for being here.
Enjoyed it.
And we want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.